Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. We've got a special guest today, Thomas Rock Lindsay. He's the owner and CEO of Humanly HR, and then the founder and the host of a really cool podcast called Small Biz Brainiac. Thomas, welcome to the program today.
Hey, Derek. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You've got an impressive 20 years of insurance and professional employer organization industry experience with C-level management, and then focusing on all aspects of workers' compensation, risk management, loss control, employee benefits, HR, and payroll. But I think it's something that a lot of us could use some insight on.
Well, it's not terribly glamorous, but it's a big part of business. So
it is, and it's a part that many of us overlook, several of those, until they come up and bite us. And so I'm glad that we have you today. I'm a small business owner as well, and I think every single thing I just mentioned is something that pops up for us at a time or another. So tell me a little bit about, you've got this 20 years of experience. Tell me, I'd love a little bit of backstory about, with your experience, what led you to start the company that you have today?
Yeah, well, it's about 24 years actually now.
Wow. So
I got started in the business kind of fresh off the turnip truck. My uncle started a company, a PEO, a professional employer organization, and he brought me in to work for him and as a work comp claims adjuster. And so for about, I don't know, it took about 3 or 4 years for me to kind of learn the ropes and kind of work my way through the different departments, and eventually became the chief operating officer. And that company lasted about 10 years before we ran into an issue with our work comp coverage in California and had to suddenly kind of wind the business down. And then we started another company kind of in the aftermath after cleaning up those issues. Hmm. And that company still exists today. It's here in, I'm actually within the offices of that company now, but I was the CEO up until about July of 2012, and then became the COO after an investor group came in with their own CEO. And then I resigned like earlier last year. And after, you know, all those years in operations, and decided to try my hand at selling the services. So That's a long way of getting to the answer to your question, which
that's
is
good.
How did I start the business? The business that I'm doing right now is I'm actually selling the services of the company that I used to, that I co-found and was the CEO and then COO of most recently.
Okay.
And I co-own this with the current CEO of the PEO, which is called Venture. And I'm learning a whole new skill set and seeing the world through a different set of lenses.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What's your physical location? Where are you guys headquartered out of?
We're in Chandler, Arizona.
Okay, excellent. So tell me, what's your leadership style? How do you help others become leaders in the industry? What's your style of leadership?
Well, my style is very, I guess it's informal. It's I like to be the servant leader style. I didn't even know that term until probably a couple of years ago when I started to hear it. But that's probably what defines me the most, is where I love to, you know, lead by example, to teach other people what I know, and to give people the reins, the latitude to be able to make mistakes and make decisions and grow and learn through that process.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's a phrase I was not familiar with until a few years ago as well, and a group asked me to come and talk about it. And so I started reading the material and went, oh no, I need to work on these things. So I'm glad that you're naturally bent that way, and I was not. So for me, it was really eye-opening to see that type of leadership style. And so that's great that you're a step ahead and already doing that, and that's rewarding for your team to see you leading by example and then empowering them.
Yeah, and I have to give my uncle credit for that, because when he hired me, he was that way with me. You know, he was just constantly teaching me and giving me the authority to make decisions. And when mistakes were made, it wasn't a big deal, right? It wasn't a disciplinary action. It was, hey, let's learn from this and move on and be better.
Hmm. Yeah, that's more empowering too, to allow you to maybe not take risks that are unwarranted, but to make good decisions that the company needs to without being completely in fear of a consequence.
Yeah, I think with that responsibility in the right hands of the right person, the right attitude, the right mentality, right, that's a powerful thing. And obviously, if you can't give that kind of latitude to someone who isn't deserving of it.
Right. So what kind of things do you look for when you, as a servant leader, which you're naturally bent towards, you've learned from a great role model, what are you looking for when you know that it's okay to hand the keys over to somebody and to make mistakes or to have the opportunity to succeed? What do you look for?
Well, it starts with attitude. It's 100% attitude. We take people all the time who might not have experience in the position or even the industry, but who have the right attitude, and you can teach almost anything. Hmm. So that's the first thing that I always look for, is attitude. And then after that, it's loyalty, and then intelligence and the ability to absorb and learn. And I guess along with all that too comes, you know, a moral code. You definitely need that.
Yeah, I like that. So tell me about the culture of your organization. You've got a focus on attitude, loyalty, intelligence, moral code. That makes for a good working environment too.
It makes for an excellent working environment. And today we have basically, I would say 90% of the management team, we've all worked together over the course of the last 20 years.
Wow.
In both, you know, this organization and the predecessor. And so it's a very tight group. And we have several people who worked for the company at one point, even the predecessor, and then left either because we laid them off or they moved on to something else, but now they're back.
Hmm. That's great. And I know we weren't here to specifically talk about that today, but I love when I get to hear real examples of somebody that's building their culture that authentically. And so thanks for sharing that. That's impressive. 90% of management together for 20 years. That's almost unheard of now.
It is. And it's, to us, it's sort of just the way it's been. But as we look at, we have hundreds and hundreds of clients, and of course we get to know those people and their organizations. And funny enough, that's a lot of the really successful ones share that in common with us, where it's a close-knit group that has been together for years and years, and maybe not in that current company, but they've worked together in the past.
So you find that your clients are have been like-minded or similar as well?
Yes, many of them.
That's awesome. So I was going to ask you how that spills over to your client relationships, to have that kind of loyalty and attitude for 20 years. You can't fake that. Are there any other examples that you could share of clients noticing your culture or noticing your customer service? Or, I mean, that's really impressive.
We get compliments all the time from our clients, who they get treated basically the way we want to be treated. And that's one of the messages that we communicate. And when we're talking to our employees and training them, and we talk about, you know, what should you do in this situation? We have our policies and our procedures. Those are important. But you also need to consider the other side, which is the human element. And the best thing you can do is ask yourself, what would I want if I were them? How would I want to be treated? And you together, you know, you can make the right decision virtually every time.
Man, thanks for sharing that. Is what's interesting to me is the things that you're sharing that we're going to talk about some today, as far as payroll, HR, workman's comp, safety, employee benefits. You know, those seem like protective things from the company sometimes for retention, but you've got this great retention strategy already, so you can have both. It's okay to have all these things in place. You need to, and that's what we'll talk about, but that doesn't mean that's going to mess up your culture as far as having a collaborative environment. And so, hey, we've got a foosball table here that we play. It's one of our release things for an agency, but some companies are compensating with games and activities sometimes to create that culture, but it sounds like you've got a really good balance.
Yeah, I think that can get a little out of hand at times, you know.
Yes.
When you're not a rec club, you're a business. And
exactly.
There are other ways to create that employee engagement. Not that those things are bad.
But they can't compensate.
They're secondary, I think.
Right. And, you know, for us, it's a nice little perk. We have a foosball table, and we're an agency, and we've got a bunch of millennials, and we like to de-stress for a few minutes, and it creates a nice, instead of the water cooler, we're at the foosball table. But yes, it's got to be secondary. Yeah. So let's dig into some of the topics I want to talk to you about today. You've got so much to share, so I want to be careful with your time. But talk to me a little bit about the hiring process. But what you wrote an article or a blog recently about demystifying the hiring process. That's such a tricky thing for so many of us. I know for our company, give us a little bit of insight, a little bit of advice.
Well, it starts with defining the position clearly and the responsibilities that go along with it, and making sure you have a solid job description and a salary range. And then from there, there's a lot of different ways to go about finding the right candidates. I like to go first to our current employees and ask for referrals. And that's our most successful recruiting source. And I even think that in one of the, I can't remember that this one, there's one of the, there's a study that I think it was done by Indeed, if I'm not mistaken, where they identified the different recruiting sources and then determined, put them in order by the most successful methods. And that was the number one. And certainly we can testify to that.
Sure. Well, you know, that's interesting too, is, I mean, some of the things you said that are obvious, but defining the position clearly, good, solid job description, but that does make a difference. And we've learned that the hard way for ourselves even is you're going to bring in the people need to clearly understand what the expectation is going to be. And then I love your idea of the asking for the referrals, because especially with your organization, especially your type, because you've got people that have been there for so many years, so you know that they're loyal and that they enjoy being there. So those that they refer in are going to know that about them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there, you know, I know there's a lot of online recruiting sources, and there's actually some that are amazing. I mean, I love Indeed, and we use a system called Hiring Thing, and it's the same as, you know, a lot of these other companies where they just blast out the job to all the job boards. The biggest problem with those is that you end up getting people who don't even remotely qualify for the position. And so these systems make it easier to sort through all of that, because it's electronic and it's organized and it's easy to push through them.
Sure.
You know, and not like you're having to sift through a pile of resumes. We do use those sources, but what helps again, and the reason I say that is that job description and it being clear about what skill set or that you're looking for, so that when you're going through all those resumes, you can easily identify the ones that have no business even applying and move those out of the way. If you don't have that, then you can get bogged down you know, reading the every application.
Yeah, that's a great point. So we've talked about the good side of the culture and the loyal customers or the loyal employees. Talk to me a little about employer liabilities. I know that's an expert topic that you have. Give us some insight on compliance issues that small businesses face and some of the corresponding liabilities.
There are so many. It's a minefield, literally. You know, you didn't go into business to be an employer, right? You didn't go into business to hire people, to pay people, to be the tax collector, to, you know, be people's caregiver and provider of insurance and all those things. That's what you're signed up for, because our fabulous government has turned the employer into basically their policeman. So wage and hour law is probably one of the biggest areas of noncompliance for small businesses, because there's so much to know about it. And a lot of it isn't, you know, intuitive, or it's just things you don't even think about. The biggest thing has to do with employee classification as to whether or not someone is salary or salary exempt, whether they're exempt from overtime or not. And you're not, an employee is not exempt from overtime just because you pay them a salary or just because you say you're a salaried employee. They have to pass a test. They have to meet certain requirements under the Fair Labor Standards Act in order to be exempt from overtime. And we actually dodged a bullet back just before Thanksgiving, I think it was, when a judge in Texas decided that the Department of Labor's new rule regarding the minimum amount of salary that you have to pay someone in order for them to qualify as salary exempt, they were going to double that. And that was going to go into effect on December 1st. Hmm. But fortunately, 20-something states got together and sued, and a judge put an injunction, a temporary injunction in place. I expect the DOL to pull that off the table under the new administration with the changing of the guard here on Friday.
With all these compliance issues, what do you recommend for small businesses? I mean, how do we stay up to date? I mean, like you said, we're making our product, we're taking care of our customers, we might be hiring, we're doing all these other things, but it's hard to keep up with everything. What do you do? What does a small business owner do?
Well, it's impossible, actually. I mean, I don't think it's possible on your own. You have to outsource. And I look at it like you're a single parent as an employer, and you need the help of another party so that you can focus on what you went into business to do. You need to outsource it. Yeah. You know, in my book, the best partner for any small business is a professional employer organization. A payroll company is good, but it's not as good. And because with the PEO, you kind of get everything taken care of under one roof. And that's what I love about the business and about what we do, is that we're kind of that one-stop shop, and we can take care of just about every employer issue that you have.
Yeah, that's great. Can you walk me through a few examples, or it doesn't have to be a case study, but you know, if I'm coming to you for help, and what areas are you watching for? Are there any, do you have any specific examples of how you're watching out for that business and watching for all of those areas for them?
Yeah, just something just as simple as making sure that you're paying the right minimum wage. That didn't used to be a big deal, because, you know, there was the federal minimum wage, and then each state had their own, and it was either equal to or greater than the federal government. Right. But over the last couple of years, in fact, I think just this year, about 22 states and a handful of other jurisdictions at the municipality or city level have new minimum wage laws that are taking effect. There was this big push to get federal minimum wage increased, and that didn't go anywhere. So then the Department of Labor went around, you know, kind of talking to the states and even cities and municipalities, counties even, trying to get them to pass their own version.
Right.
And so now we have this patchwork of minimum wage laws even down to the city level. And if you're not paying attention to that, you can get out of compliance real quick. So that's one. I mean, we're obviously, we've got our ear to the ground. We know what's going on. We know what's pending and coming up. And so we're able to make sure that, you know, you're in compliance. And, you know, going back to that FLSA, the Fair Labor Standards Act, and the DOL change relative to salary exempt employees, I'm amazed at how many employers were not aware that that was a huge change taking effect on December 1st.
Right.
And it was estimated that it would impact about 4 million employees across the throughout the country.
That's incredible. Yeah. And you know what? We as much as we try to keep up with politics and try to keep up with things that affect us, like you said again earlier, we're busy making our product and taking care of our customers. It's hard to even keep up with those things. So I definitely see the value in having somebody that's watching out for you for that. That's why we have our accountants to do things. That's why we have our attorneys for things. So tell me a little bit about government regulations. What are some of the costly types of challenges that small businesses are facing while trying to keep up with some of the other changing laws? You talk about quickly drowning in a sea of regulation, and where can these small businesses find help?
Well, you go to the PEO, and that's where you find help, in my opinion. But yeah, it's, like I said, it's just a impossibility to be in compliance 100%. The problem is that things change so quickly, and it's not just the passage of laws, right? It's not like there's a new law that's being passed. It's that these regulatory authorities are creating new rules and new regulations and even interpreting existing rules in a different way that create change and then new liability for you. And you just don't know what you don't know. And you don't know whether if you have an account or an HR person in house, you still don't know whether those people are staying on top of things as they should. And I'm, you know, in most cases, assuming that, especially if you're outsourcing to an accountant, you know, they're going to know their particular area, right? Tax and accounting.
Right.
But they're not going to have eyes on maybe like the OSHA changes in the reporting of workplace injuries. So you really need to find a company that provides the service in all those areas, you know, insurance.
Thomas, tell me, so if, you know, a small business owner listening, it who's saying, you know, that's great, but I, you know, I don't know if that's something that's in my budget. Well, you know, we might come back and go, well, yeah, but you don't want to learn through government enforcement or lawsuits. Give me some kind of range. I mean, what does it look like if someone's going to go to and have a PEO? What can they expect?
Well, typically you're going to save money when it comes to your insurance, like your workers' compensation insurance and your employee benefits. You'll pay an administrative fee, basically a service fee, and that ranges anywhere from 1% of your payroll up to 5% of your payroll, depending on a few factors: how many employees you have, what your turnover looks like, how many pay periods in the year, and maybe even the nature of your business. So whether there's, you know, extensive job costing or lots of different departments and locations and those things. But it's far less expensive than paying penalties, than paying fines. And in one area, for example, workers' compensation insurance is experience rated in part, right? Part of what your premium is based on your historical performance, yours alone.
Right.
And if you're in a business where your work comp is a good portion of your payroll expense, if you're in construction or if you're welders or mechanics or trucking, transportation, even the hospitality industry. If you're not paying attention to your workplace safety, then you could have a year or two where you've got higher than expected losses. Your individual experience modifier is going to rise, causing your future premiums to increase above the cost of your competitors. And now you're going to have to make up for that in other ways. And it's going to take you time to reverse that trend.
Right.
Because the way it works is your experience modifier is based on the last 3 years of your loss history, not including the most recent year. You've got to have that in mind at all times.
I mean, obviously it makes sense, and it seems like a good solution. Are you alarmed? Are you surprised at the number of small businesses that have not leaned in to this support yet? What are you finding as a trend, either with businesses once they realize this, or businesses that just simply don't know what their options are still?
That's a good question. I am surprised, actually,
right.
Having been in the business for as long as I've been in it, how many small businesses are unaware of the service that's available through a PEO?
Hmm.
And how many of them, people, I think it's in people's nature mostly to just kind of learn the hard way, right?
Right.
And again, there's so much to know, and there's things you wouldn't even think that you need to know, because, who could imagine that business in America is so complicated? and so you're just not, it's just not in the forefront of your mind, and then you don't realize it until there's an issue, right? You don't, mm-hmm. you don't realize until it's time. Maybe somebody files a wage and hour claim or a discrimination claim, or your insurance agent says, hey, your premium's going to go up, 30% this year because you've had poor losses in years past. And you're like, what? And I guess part of that, too, is just, there's new blood all the time. It's not like everybody's been in business for 20 years, right?
You've right.
got people that are just coming online now that have been in business 3 years or 4 years and
right.
haven't learned those lessons yet.
Well, there's so much to know and learn. I mean, we're in the marketing sector. I mean, when you start putting all these things together, and then the marketing and then the sales side and then the making the product and the quality control and the customer relationships, there's a lot to know, more than just making your product. So that's why we do shows like this, is to put a spotlight on the resources. Give me a profile of somebody. So, like you said, there's new companies all the time. But when I'm looking at my own company, when those listeners are looking at their companies, when should they start looking for a resource like this? I mean, a lot are going to say, well, we're too small, or we'll do that someday. What's a profile of somebody that should start considering?
You should start considering it from pretty much from day one. You want to outsource right away. At least you need a payroll service provider to help you with the payroll aspect of it. And that's very affordable, very economical. That's a good start.
That's great. So tell me, you wrote something recently about the 10 small business pitfalls to avoid. Could we go over a few of those?
Oh, sure.
Excellent. I remember you started with the one was screwing up on payroll taxes.
Yes. That happens. You'd be surprised at how often that happens. And again, it's because it's so complicated. You first have to determine what kind of depositor you are when it comes to paying your payroll taxes, whether you're a monthly depositor or a semi-weekly depositor. You could be quarterly, and you could also be annual, but that doesn't happen very, very often. It's not terribly intuitive, and the instructions that the IRS provides, they're pretty clear, but you might go into, let's say you're just starting up, you've got a couple of employees, you qualify as a monthly depositor, you read up on the rules, right? You see, okay, yeah, I am a monthly depositor, but what a couple of months goes by, 4, 5, 6 months goes by, you hire 3 more employees, now all of a sudden you're a semi-weekly depositor, but you didn't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't bother to go back and look and see. Now you're paying your federal 941 taxes, your payroll taxes, late. You can be penalized up to 15% of the tax plus interest. Plus, if you didn't file your form on time, there's separate penalties for that.
Right.
And if you didn't file it electronically, there's a penalty for that. It's a snowball. And I've heard hundreds of stories from small businesses who have gone through exactly that, where the person that the business owner hired to take care of those things was competent at a certain level, but as the company grew, it surpassed their level of competence.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody said anything.
Yeah, I've personally been through that several years ago with another company, so I can relate to that one specifically.
Yeah.
And we had somebody handling it for us. So when we started getting the letters, we said, this can't be possible. But it was.
Yep.
So the next one, misclassifying workers as independent contractors.
That happens a lot.
Yes, it does.
People think that, well, I'll just, you know, pay you and you take care of your taxes yourself. I'll call you an independent contractor. And because we both agree, that's okay.
Nope.
But it's not. It's not okay. And there's an IRS test. It's, I think, an 11-point test that looks at three different categories of the relationship to determine whether or not they're an employee or an independent contractor. It looks at the behavioral control that you have over them, the financial control that you have over them, and then the nature of the relationship. And so each of those 11 questions are designed to determine the answers to based on those three categories.
Yeah, that's it's a big deal. It's very important to classify it correctly. I've seen that about 7 out of 10, maybe closer to 9 out of 10 times. If you're really questioning it, they're probably a W-2 and probably not an independent contractor.
Yeah, it's the vast majority of relationships are really employee-employer relationships.
That the business owner tries to tell themselves as independent contractor. Because and I understand why. I've been there as far as having that dilemma of what to do. But yeah, that's really important to make sure you're classifying correctly. I'm glad you identify that. What about not understanding the difference between profit and cash flow?
Yeah. So cash flow, you know, obvious cash flow is the money that's flowing in from the different sources. Profit is what you're left with after you pay your expenses. And I think a lot of times startups get confused about that and they run the business based on the cash and how it's coming in and going out as opposed to, you know, what the true net revenue is, right? I have all these costs of goods sold expenses, all these that have to come out of that revenue before you can use the money to spend on your operating expenses. Hmm. Way to get in trouble real quick. But it happens regularly. People don't make that distinction. I'm always surprised when I hear stories about people that, you know, don't have, they might do their accounting, you know, once a month, every other month, and you know, it's really cash accounting and it's not accrual accounting, and you need to be on an accrual accounting system.
Yeah, and you know what? I was smiling as you're sharing that because it seems obvious, but you've got it as one of your points because you see it so often. So that means it's a real issue, and especially when you start doing volume and people aren't factoring in paying the vendors and the cost of goods sold and the other things, that can be really dangerous to the survival of a company pretty quickly. So talk about not managing workers' comp and compensation insurance benefits.
Well, that's we were talking about that a little earlier, where it's because workers' compensation insurance is experience rated. If you're not managing your losses, if you're not proactively working to create a safe work environment and proactively working to keep the cost of an injury down, then it can get out of hand and to the point where you earn what's called a debit modifier or a debit experience modifier, which means you're going to be paying more than average for coverage from a similarly situated company. So if you have your competitor down the street, if you're a framer, for example, you're paying a pretty high rate for work comp per $100 of payroll. And if you have a debit mod and your competitor down the street has a credit mod where they're paying below average because they've managed their loss history, that's the difference between you winning a bid and not.
You talk about paying competitive wages too. That's a common pitfall that you see.
Yeah, skimping on the wages that you're going to pay means you're going to get what you pay for, right?
Yeah, this is no exception. You're right.
And you need to be the best. You need the best. You need to spend as much as you can afford and get the right quality people. It's that getting the right people on the bus concept.
Hmm. Good.
Because then once you've got the right people on the bus, you can take the bus almost anywhere in any direction and accomplish anything.
Yeah, that's good. And the last question I have for you on that is talk about the right kind of business insurance. How do you know what do you need to look for when you're getting your business insurance?
Well, you need to look for an insurance agent who is not focused on selling the policies of the carrier who pays them the most commission. You need to find an insurance consultant who is going to put your interests above their own when it comes to the coverage that they're going to place for you. So, but what type of business insurance you need obviously depends on the type of business that you're in. Every business needs a general liability insurance policy, and every business should have, if there's any kind of transportation issue, a commercial auto policy. And then if you're in the type of business where you're hauling equipment back and forth, you need to augment the commercial auto with inland marine coverage. But there's all kinds of customized policies for the type of business that you're in. So I would look for an insurance agent who specializes in your industry, because they're going to know the types of risks that you're exposed to, and they're going to know where to find the right policy to cover that, so you're not left finding out later that you didn't have, you know, maybe there was an exclusion in the policy where there shouldn't have been, because you needed that particular type of protection.
Man, Thomas, thanks for this information. I want our listeners to know about your podcast and your website, smallbizbrainiac.com. You're the founder and host of this Small Biz Brainiac podcast, which is provides employer intelligence to small business owners. So, you know, we've just scratched the surface of information today, obviously. So those that want to learn more, give us a little bit more information about your podcast. I'd love to plug that before we go today.
Well, the podcast has been around. I think I actually launched mine the same time you launched yours.
Okay, so, excellent.
February 4th last year.
That sounds about right.
I was doing two episodes a week, just short 7 to 10 minute episodes. And I decided at the end of December that I was going to change it up and go to a longer episode with a co-host and an expert panel. And so now I have the very first episode like that was released last week.
Awesome.
And we're going to do every Monday now going forward, and they'll be a little longer and maybe hopefully a little more entertaining than me just sitting there and lecturing on a particular topic for then. That's the reason why they were short, is because I didn't want to bore people to death. I wanted to give them, you know, good information in a short period of time, no fluff, no frills.
Right.
And, you know, if you listen to those 94, 93 episodes and as a, You'll learn a lot. I guess it doesn't matter who you are. You'll learn a lot of things, hopefully, listening to those shows.
That's great. Tell us about the website too.
Smallbizbrainiac.com. And I actually have a section there. If you scroll down the homepage, it says Got Questions. And I'll answer anybody's employer-related question. I love doing that. I love responding and helping people. There's no obligation. You're not going to hear from me. I'm not going to sell you anything. I'm just here to help.
That's great.
I want to help.
Well, we appreciate that. And you've got this free report. Can you tell us about this free report that you have on your site as well?
Yeah, the 8 steps to lowering your employer liability.
Yeah.
And essentially what that is if you go and you apply for employment practices liability insurance, and you go through that application, and if you can answer yes to all the questions, you're a good risk, right? Mm-hmm. And so those 8 steps are the things that the insurance companies who provide protection against you making a mistake as an employer, these are the things they want you to have in place to make sure that they don't have to pay any money out and they make a profit. So best way to lower your employer liability is to prepare yourself to be approved for EPLI insurance.
Excellent. I actually just filled out to get my copy. Thomas Rock Lindsay, owner and CEO of Humanly HR, founder and host of the Small Biz Brainiac podcast. Thank you again for being our guest today. And we really look forward to seeing the other great things that you're doing and following the content that you continue to put out on your podcast.
Well, thanks, Derek. I really appreciate being on the show and love what you're doing.
Hey, same to you. Again, listeners, go to smallbizbrainiac.com to learn more. Thomas will answer your questions, and you can download that free report and listen to his podcast. Thomas, best of luck to you in 2017. Healthy and prosperous year, and we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
You too, Derek. Thanks.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.